In past, I have been at times criticized for perhaps not being sufficiently sensitive to the reality of our veterans. And perhaps such criticism at times is grounded because I have not always navigated sensitively enough, perhaps even faithfully enough, the currents that are bumping up against each other when we participate in a service like this, when we remember the important sanctity of life and the loss of life of so very many men and women down through the years. It is a difficult path to negotiate, where we are filled with stories and the import of Jesus' testimony that we live a life according to God's vision of how the human family ought to live, that is filled with peace and justice and hope and love. And yet the reality of choices made by individuals and nations come crashing down on our attempt to live in such a way. And wars often result. I'm aware of the conflict, not only in our world, but in myself. For it begins in our heart in many ways. Those aggressive impulses that go from head to heart to action that do not serve well the purposes of God. It could be an off day when somebody cuts me off in traffic. I'm not usually very exercised by that, but there have been times when if I was a person giving to very colorful swearing, it might have come forth. It is the fear of my mother's warning about from the time I was a little child that I don't swear. But if it were removed, that fear, I've heard some pretty colorful things that I could repeat. In you and in me, we struggle with those aggressive and even violent tendencies. We see that writ large in families, in communities, in nations. So what I want to do today is to offer up perhaps a framework for reflection that includes our gospel story, and perhaps the Spirit will help us lead questions, provoke wonderings and ponderings that might serve us and the purposes of God well. Are you up for that? Let's try. I'm thinking today as I was preparing this week of a number of things. One, as you are fully aware, of the special anniversary that will occur tomorrow. That anniversary being the 20th anniversary of the collapse of the Berlin Wall. And there are all kinds of celebrations that are planned in Germany for this and other parts of the world, but mostly in Germany. People have come. I mean, even U2 is going to be there for a big concert and so forth. So all kinds of things are going to be going on. But the reason I remember that and how it came to mind in the reflection and preparation for our message today and our service is that I thought of the events that brought that about. Built in 1961, and certainly a symbol of the division that had arisen in Europe, the fall of the Berlin Wall came about as a result of decades long, not only of totalitarian rule, but also of quiet and often, not always, but often nonviolent protests. In fact, in that year, in 1989, there was that round table Polish discussion, where there was an openness now to negotiate and talk with those who were advocating, activists that were advocating for reform. There's the opening up of the Hungarian border that allowed a back door for those from the Bloc nations to enter into Europe. There was a fomenting of a desire for independence. Only in small measure, I believe, was the role played by Ronald Reagan in 1987 when he said to Gorbachev at the Brandenburg Gate, tear down this wall. For there had already been a wave of movement in the direction of reform. But it was from the imagination of the populace, as it were, getting restless and upset with what was happening and the oppression and the clamping down that began to cause fissures in that attempt to crush. But largely, there were peaceful undertakings, civil unrest, not often, but sometimes, yes, but not often, given to violence. So I know, in that instance, and also in the instance of the Philippines, the people power revolt, as it were, that there are imaginative ways in which we can accomplish the peacemaking and justice hopes of our nations. When we come to our text in Mark, there are some principles there that help evoke for us perhaps some tools to navigate our world, both our internal world in our heart and our minds, and our political and social and societal world. Remember the context of the text. Last week we talked about Jesus teaching and debating with the teachers of the law about how to sum up the law. Thou shalt love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as you love yourself. Later on, that is not in our text reading today, he talked about the scribes who had recognized that this Christ, this Messiah, would come as a descendant of David, but in a sense saying, here's this Christ right in the midst of them, in their faith, and they have not recognized because they understand the coming of the Messiah in a different way. That this coming of the Messiah would, through violent means, overturn the Roman oppression of the people in Judea and establish the Jewish nation once again. It is those expectations that Jesus is saying caused them to be blind. And so we come to this particular text, and there are some principles that I think are important for us to wrestle with and to allow to reflect and frame our questions. First, Jesus offers a critique, a judgment, as it were, on the scribes. These particular scribes are meant to be interpreters of the law, the Torah. They are not supposed to receive remuneration. They're not supposed to get payment for this. This is something that they are doing as part of the temple responsibility and the care and spiritual guidance of the people. But something has gone terribly wrong with this institution. And Jesus is not the only one who had been critical of the temple's reality in those days. The Qumran community, and there were many others that were complaining about the oppressive nature of that which God had established to be liberating. And so Jesus critiques the scribes and says that they walk around in long robes. That was a very sobering thing when I put my robe on today. They walk around in long robes. They make these long prayers. They like to have the best seats in the synagogue. They like to have salutations. Everybody recognizing how important they are. But most damning is the fact that they devour widows' houses and property. Now, how could that come about? We're not told exactly, and there are many guesses about what took place. But the scribes were also those who were responsible for keeping track of certain land transactions. And the widows, we know from the story of Ruth, that when the husband died, The land was not sold on the open market. It was passed along. But if there were debts that were applied against the home, there's something that happened to consistently rob and take away the properties of widows from them, leaving them even more destitute. So some funny business has been going on in the scribing of the transfer of properties. Whatever it is, we don't know precisely. Jesus criticizes this institution that has institutionalized the oppression of the most marginalized in the society. This temple institution that is not meant to do that. We are told from Hebrew scriptures that the temple was to be built in order to be a place of prayer and a place of spiritual formation for all people. The Holy of Holies, the court where the men could go, the court of the women, and the court of the nations. Everyone was welcome to the temple. But somehow the institution has gotten perverted to the place where they are oppressed. So there is a principle of judgment against that which is intended to liberate and to free, but becomes an oppressing reality that constricts the imagination and causes people to seek their own benefit and not that of everyone else. So we have to lift this up and to find out what is it of that which we observe today is worthy of critique. That's a courageous undertaking. Is it the mentality, the ideology that lies behind some of the war making? What was the name or what was the purpose of the First World War? Does anybody remember? It was the war to what? To end all wars. A huge claim. This is the war to end all wars. Did that happen? There's something about the ideology of the war making that is worthy of critique, of judgment in the way of Jesus, as it were. 15 million people, mostly civilians, killed. Well, then we had the Second World War. No longer did we hear such a pronouncement, the war to end all wars, because we had in part learned from the first that that doesn't happen. You see, war can never produce peace. It produces an interim lull until other conditions come about that create a choice for war again. This is irrespective of Augustine's statement that all war, the goal or end of all war, is peace. I respect a lot of things about our educated Augustine, but I don't agree with all his teaching. Further, as we see how this corresponds with our text, the question we have to ask then, as Jesus points the disciples to the example of the widow, is this. I believe it is an illustration of what Jesus has been saying. And I am guilty in past for having interpreted this particular reference to the widow as it is traditionally interpreted, maybe as a way to squeeze more money out of people on Stewardship Sunday. Look at the widow's mite. She gave all she had, so that means that what? You should give more. Now, I'm not against you giving more. I want to make that clear. I'm not against you giving more to the work of God through the church. Give on. I'm happy with that. But I don't believe it is truthful, and I don't believe it is what is intended by this particular reference. When Jesus speaks in this particular scenario with the disciples, notice what happens. And Mark situates things not by accident. It says, Jesus sat down. Do you remember the word? Opposite the treasury. There's something there. Jesus is opposed to certain things. So there's not there's an economy of use in the language. Jesus sat down opposite the treasury and he called his disciples' attention to something. People are walking by, putting in huge amounts. Clang, clang, clang. It was a great big receptacle it was. And you could tell who was giving the most. You can only imagine that this widow, again, a symbol of the most marginalized and oppressed people in that society, are moving very sheepishly, hoping nobody will notice, to put in the little 2 copper coins that amount to hardly anything in terms of the monetary value. But somehow, sitting opposite the treasury, Jesus sees and draws attention to her and tells his disciples, you see that widow? She has put in more than all the others because she's given out of her poverty all her living, or the Greek could be interpreted all of her life, all her life. I do not believe, because nowhere in the text does Jesus say, in a sense, go and do likewise. I don't believe Jesus is admiring necessarily her having to give that way. I believe it's an example. Jesus is saying to his disciples, here is an example of how the scribes are taking from the widows that I was just mentioning. Look, they have manipulated her spirituality and manipulated it in such a way that she feels compelled, if she is going to be observant, to give all she has. But you see, the thing with our texts and with the story of the gospel is that there are always multiple meanings. And so while I believe that to be true, I also believe in the sense that this widow is like a prophet. A prophet calling attention to the disciples' awareness of what Jesus has been saying all along. Jesus has said to his disciples 3 times, I have to go up and die in Jerusalem. And each time they want to talk about something else. No, no, forbid it. Don't let it be that way. And this widow gives her all her life as a foreshadowing, perhaps, of Jesus who 5 days from hence will also give his all on the cross. So in this story, in this critique, there is praise and there is sacrifice as well. Just as in that which we are observing today on Remembrance Sunday. There is room for us to critique the ideology of war. For I think it was Eisenhower that said, I hate war as only a soldier who has lived it can, only as one who has seen its brutality, its futility, its stupidity. Erasmus said, war is delightful to those who have no experience of it. So there's room for critique. There's also room for praise. Praise of those stories of heroism, of sacrifice, of looking after each other's back, as it were. Stories of soldiers who would give their lives to save their company and their friends, who took on suicide-type initiatives in order to create less casualty for others. Praise of those who undertake, as in the long tradition of Canada, the peacemaking missions to try to quell conflicts in many parts of the world. There's room for praise and the recognition of sacrifice. It is not easy, but we, like Jesus and the disciples, are called to look carefully at what is it that prefigures what God, through Christ, would have us be and do. What is it? Jesus taught over and over, blessed are the peacemakers. Jesus' life was one that insinuated itself into the conflicts of the day and called attention to what people would want to hide and cover up. So in our reflection then, on ourselves, on our war making, on the people that we remember whose sacrifice is not to be sneezed at or not to be undermined. In all of those considerations, let us hold up the invitation to receive from God that which will grant us the perspective and the grace to live boldly in the way of Christ. Let there be room for critique and judgment. Let there be a place for praise and acknowledgement. Let there be a recognition of the sacrifice of it all. Let us ponder that and see what sense the Spirit will help us make of it in our own lives, in our society, in our congregation. Amen.